Labor for April 15th, 2013. Like this time of the year, we're going to be jumping all around. We've got quite a few bills to deal with, but a lot of the fiscals are not in on them. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to open the public hearing first and probably open a work session on House Bill 3487. Jan, if you could read the summary of the bill, please.
Madam Chair and committee members, this bill allows police officers and firefighters who are members of PERS killed in the line of duty to be considered vested for purposes under the pension program of the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan. It declares an emergency effective on passage. There's no amendment. There's no revenue impact, and there's a minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you. Representative Matthews.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Greg Matthews, State Representative of House District 50, the great city of Gresham. Here before you today testifying on behalf of House Bill 3487. And you'll notice at the top of the list, I'm joined by some of my esteemed colleagues. Vice Chair Barton, thank you. Representative Jensen, Representative Smith, Representative Thompson, and Representative Witt. All in an effort to champion this legislation through somewhat of a speedy process. Now, just to reflect back, you recall the PERS-related bill that we had for Buddy Heron. And Buddy Heron, of course, lost his life in the line of duty, and he was not vested. He was about 4 years and 6 months and just a few months short of being vested. Therefore, his family had no benefit of the PERS system or his contribution to the community. Oh, it took a little over a year for the bill to be heard by us to finally try to right that wrong, and we did so by passing that bill out of our chamber, and rightly so. At the time, we had discussion as a panel, and I think the comment was made that it's too bad we can't do more. And on that particular day, we said, well, you know, why couldn't we look at a bill that would do this for our public safety folks that are killed in the line of duty? And that's in line 10 of the bill. The most important part of this is line 10 of the bill that says killed in the line of duty. So I know the fiscal would probably be indeterminate. There will be some folks that say, well, there'll definitely be a fiscal on that. But I want to remind folks that these are people that have to be killed in the line of duty and not be vested at the time. Those numbers would be pretty, pretty low. I myself have had the terrible fortune of participating in funerals as a member of our honor guard for the Gresham Fire and Emergency Services Honor Guard. We don't go to a lot of funerals, but one is too many. But in a situation where somebody is serving our community in that fashion and they lose their life in line of duty, I didn't think we should have the family wait until we could assemble again, despite annual sessions, to get this righted. I would like to see us take action. I certainly want to commend the folks at LC, Zach Reeves in my office, for getting this done so quickly. And again, this is about killed in the line of duty for members that aren't vested, that are police and firefighters serving our communities. And with that, everybody says pretty simple bill, but this one is pretty straightforward. And I really appreciate you hearing it so quickly, Madam Chair, and the committee for their attention.
Yeah. Any questions, or would you like to add something, Representative?
No, I wanted to thank Representative Matthews for taking the lead on this issue. I was at a priority bill, so thank you very much. Also wanted to thank our chair. This is something I guess is not often seen, but we literally didn't have the bill back in time for the deadline for posting, etc. It was very kind of the chair to schedule this and post this bill before we had it. That was a courtesy that was very kind. Thank you.
And Madam Chair and Vice Chair Barton, again, compliment the Chair for her willingness, and thank you, Jan, for your work, but also the co-chief sponsors. It's broad support. We wanted to include the folks that chief sponsored the initial effort for Buddy Heron, and just to be clear, the reason why we didn't want to amend that bill was because his family's been waiting, and there's no need to cloud that issue, and they deserve to have that benefit, and I felt like bogging that down would be wrong. This deserves its own priority. Buddy Heron deserves, his family deserves what we've done and taken action for him specifically. And this would be a way to address that for everybody from this day forward so that we didn't have to wait for us to join again into an annual session and thus having a family be without benefit for quite some time.
Okay, thank you. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I'm wondering, did we look at like possibly just doing it as a benefit, because I mean, we're singling out two groups here. How about ODOT with a guy standing alongside the road or a teacher in a classroom that might be have workplace violence where they are knifed or something like that as well. And I'm wondering if it wouldn't be better for us to look at like a term life insurance policy for them up to the time when they're vested as part of the benefit, if that wouldn't make more sense for all employees rather than singling out a single class of employee.
Representative, I've never attended the funeral of a teacher, and Madam Chair and Representative Widener, of a teacher that was killed in the line of duty. I don't know how many folks from ODOT have stood out in the street and gotten hit, but I do know that happens. I have attended countless funerals for police and fire. I didn't do that to avoid anybody or exclude anybody, but I did look at two groups that were specific to the bill that we had dealt with Buddy Heron and felt like that was our best chance. If there's a desire to amend the bill to fit a broad universe of folks, my guess is that would be an easy bill, pardon the expression, but to kill in the line of our duty. I would rather focus on the situations that happen infrequently but do happen and then deal with the others as they come up than to risk losing this bill in a short time frame. And I think we all know about the time constraints in this chamber. So my desire would be to not amend this bill, keep this bill moving forward, and address those situations with ODOT, get some statistics behind it, and move forward if that's the desire of the chair and the committee. But for this bill, I would prefer that we would just move the bill as it is.
Any other questions? I think just a comment. I know this will surprise the audience, but being Irish, I have a background of lots of relatives in public safety. And my grandfather, although it was not listed as in the line, died 2 days after he was hit in the leg, breaking up a strike in the city of Seattle as a police officer. And even though that was back in the days that there was no pension, it's kind of the feeling in the public service world, even though he never really got a pension and my grandmother really had no income coming in, there was not a week that didn't go by from the day that that happened until the day she died that a police officer didn't stop by from the city of Seattle to find out whether there was something they could do for them. And that's kind of what we're talking about when you talk about public safety.
Yes, and Madam Chair, members of the committee, I want to be clear. I sounded very insensitive to say I haven't heard of a teacher. I understand what's occurred throughout the nation. I understand the violence that can occur within a school. I'm not aware personally of that occurring to anybody I know in the teaching professions or in the state of Oregon, but I do know that that occurs throughout the nation. It's a concern of mine as well. I think that the world is becoming very violent. Everybody is at risk, but there are folks that we call to run into these buildings when people are running out, and this bill is about them.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So I close the public hearing on House Bill. Excuse me. Oh, we have somebody else signed up. Mayor Botkin. Sorry, I didn't look at the list. I would never overlook you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Mary Botkin with AFSCME Council 75. And I want to thank Representative Matthews and the other sponsors of this bill for bringing this forward. I think this is critically important for a very, very small group of folks. In my 30-some years of working for AFSCME, Buddy Heron is the first officer that I know of that was killed in the line of duty that was not vested when he was killed. And when you look at this circle of folks that this bill will impact, it is very, very small. Fortunately, with the advent of more and more safety equipment, fewer and fewer public safety officers are killed in the line of duty, but one is too many. Even fewer are killed before they are vested in the retirement system. And so this is a very small universe that we're talking about, but the universe is critically important to cover. Buddy's death left behind five children with no father and no sort of likelihood of a great future economically. And this was probably the hardest thing I've ever gone through as a union rep. you know, just trying to figure out some way to help this family in a meaningful manner. And, you know, the bill that we passed for Buddy earlier certainly is not going to make a huge difference in their lives, but it does acknowledge that he gave his all. And, you know, anytime somebody is killed, we need to do what's right. And it seems to me like giving somebody their retirement is the least we can do. And I want to thank Representative Matthews again for doing this. And we will be supporting this as aggressively as we do the Buddy Heron bill for anybody in the future who suffers the same kind of fate. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Ms. Bonko? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to speak on this bill? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3487, and I open up a work session on House Bill 3487.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3487 on the floor with a due pass recommendation. And that the measure be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Barton moves House Bill 3487 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the measure be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Okay. Seeing none, Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Wyden.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Excused.
Vice Chair Representative
Penn. Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Motion passes. This is going to Ways and Means, no need for a carrier. And since, have I gaveled that out yet?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay.
The work session.
Okay. I close the work session. I again open the work session on House Bill 3487. And would you move to suspend the rules to hold the committee?
Of course. Madam Chair, I move to suspend the rules to allow Representative Holby to vote on House Bill 3487.
Okay.
And how do I vote?
Everyone has voted.
I vote aye.
Thank you. This is the bill for public employees or public safety people who are not vested in PERS that are killed in the line of duty. To be vested.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 3487. Okay. As I said earlier, we're waiting on a lot of the fiscals from the Legislative Fiscal Office, so I think I'm just going to review those real quickly for those of you that are waiting here with bated breath to speak on your issues. House Bill 2669, we're waiting for a fiscal. And so we're going to be carrying it over until Wednesday. House Bill 2672, we are also waiting for a fiscal on this. We've already adopted the Dash 5 amendments, and so that will be carried over. House Bill 2977, we are waiting for a fiscal on that one. We already adopted the Dash 1 amendments, and so we'll carry that one over. House Bill 3076, we are also waiting for a fiscal on that one, and both the above ones were a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. So that will be carried over. House Bill 3142, we're waiting for a fiscal. So we'll be carrying that one over. But House Bill 3307 is ready to move. Okay. So I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3307. Jan, if you could summarize the bill.
Madam Chair, committee members, the bill requires an employer who fails to provide meal period or rest breaks in accordance with the rules adopted by BOLI to pay additional 1 1/2 hours of wages for each day the employer violated the rules. There's a proposed Dash 1 amendment before you that specifies the employer is not liable for payment of additional compensation under certain conditions, and there is no revenue impact, and there is a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay. Is there somebody that can talk about the Dash 1 amendments to this?
My name is Michael Dale from the Northwest Worker Justice Project, Madam Chair and members of the committee. The Dash 1 amendments were drafted to address a situation where you had a very open workplace where people were free to move about wherever you wanted to, where there was perfect ability to be able to take your break, but then things go sour, and because it's been an open workplace, there's not a record of when breaks were taken or not, and someone comes along and says, well, you owe me breaks for the last years that I worked here. And basically what the Dash 1 amendments do is they say that if you're in a work situation such that you're able to move about and take your break without the intervention of the employer, the supervisor basically, if the employer has a policy, a written policy that says that that breaks are permitted, that complies with the BOLI rules, then it would shift the burden to the employee to prove that the employer actually knew that breaks were being prohibited. And only under those circumstances would the employee be entitled to the extra compensation. Now, BOLI had some concerns about the bill, and so we also put in language to say this doesn't have anything to do with whether you're in compliance with the rule or not. I mean, you can't just pay the money and not give the breaks. That was one of the concerns they had. It also doesn't change the standard for how BOLI looks at whether you're, who has to prove whether breaks are being given or not. This is only addressed, solely addressed, to the question of the additional remedy.
Okay, are there any questions? Representative Fagan.
Thank you, and thank you, Michael. I think I'm assuming that numerous committee members shared these concerns, but I think that the Dash 1 amendments were intended to, I was not going to be able to support the bill in its original form, but I spoke with Mr. Day, and I just had those concerns about a workplace where employers do not supervise every moment and really don't know if employees are taking, a full 15-minute break or whether it's an 11-minute break, and I didn't want to create open the floodgates of litigation after somebody, ends employment to be able to go back and collect 2 years of back, missed breaks when the employer had no idea that they were missing the breaks. And so I appreciate the bill sponsors for being willing to amend this to kind of target more of a narrow set where employers are actually involved in prohibiting their employees from taking the breaks. And the Dash 1 allows me to be able to move to support the underlying bill.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? I have one. So I assume if an employee does not want to take a break, that's still their option.
I suppose so.
Yeah. So that's the choice that they make if they choose not to. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dale.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Dale, I said Dale.
Want a motion?
Okay.
Yeah, that's one way to find out.
Yep.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3307.
Okay. Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments for House Bill 3307. Is there any discussion? Representative Kinnemer.
I'll support the amendments, but I don't support the bill.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Any objection? It has been noted. Seeing that, the amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3307 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Barton moves House Bill 3307 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any other further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Widener.
First of all, I think my staff's probably on break all day long up there, but and they don't pay me for doing that. But I won't be supporting this bill either. I don't think it's necessary and anything that we should be dealing with at this time in this session. So.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. One thing that kind of stood out to me was the fact that the money that goes against an employer, none of it goes to the employee. Why? Let's get some of that money to the employee. It goes to the school fund. I don't see a nexus there at all. And then I asked about the fact that there's a whistleblowing law and that it seems like what would fall under is a threat. If I tell an employee as an employer that you can't take your breaks or I'm going to fire you if you ask me any more about breaks, that is part of the whistleblowing law that is already in place, and there are some pretty good penalties for that. I think there are tools already in place to deal with this. And so, anyway, I just think that even though some said that wasn't likely to occur because then an employee is afraid that they would be fired, that's the whole point of the whistleblowing law right there. So, anyhow, just...
Yeah. Thank you very much. Any other... Representative Matthews and Representative Fagan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the Dash 1 amendments. I still have some reservations, but I'm going to support the Dash 1 amendments and move it to the floor, not because I think like the proponents did a great job of setting the table for this bill. I want to be clear. I didn't hear that Boley failed at any point in a specific example of Boley failing, where somebody said, I filed a claim to Boley, and they did nothing. What I heard was from workers that are no longer employed in those same capacities complaining about the situation that they were in and yet did nothing. I'm just not a very litigious guy that believes a private right of action is the way to solve the world's problems. I really don't think it is. And had it not been for a colleague that assures me that this is a problem within his industry and within his colleagues, I would be strongly opposing the bill. The Dash ones make it easier to support the bill, but I may be voting no on the floor. That doesn't mean I need more time with any proponent of the bill to come into my office and convince me why we do this. This is simply saying that I just don't feel the burden of proof has been met on this particular issue. It's frustrating to me that we didn't hear from somebody that said, I have filed with Boley, they failed to perform, I'm still in the situation, and I can't get resolved. That's not been made clear to me. But again, I'll support the Dash 1s, I'll support the bill to the floor, I may be voting no. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Fagan?
I'll pass.
Okay, anybody else? Okay. Representative Barton?
I think I already moved it, didn't I?
Discussion.
We're in discussion.
You did motion.
Okay. I think
we're ready. No further discussion. Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
No.
Representative Holby.
Point of clarification, are we voting on the amendment or on the bill?
Bill as amended.
Bill.
Bill as amended.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
No.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative
Weidman.
No.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative
Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative
Tanner.
Aye.
No.
Oh, whoops.
A little early there, Madam Chair.
Words in your mouth.
I appreciate the help, but it didn't work.
I apologize. I apologize, Representative Kennedy.
That's really exercising your authority, Chair.
Brandon, could you say his name again?
That was Shoffer days right there.
Vice Chair Representative.
No.
Chair Representative
Authority. Aye. Okay, motion passes.
That was pretty funny.
We'll have Representative Denbrough carry it on the floor. Thank you very much. Okay. Next, we are going to hear House Bill, some questions on House Bill 3436, but Representative Bailey is in flight right now, so we're going to wait until he lands before we get him on the phone. So,
there he is now.
I see Fizzbill the Clown made it.
So we're going to adopt some of the amendments. I open up a work session on House Bill 2535. Jan, if you could summarize the bill, please.
Madam Chair, committee members, this member bill requires workers' compensation rates. Excuse me. We'll just look at the Dash 3 amendment since it replaces the original measure. It prohibits the employer client of a temporary service provider from paying the employee through the temporary service provider and paying the employee directly for the work performed in the same period, pay period. It requires the temporary service provider to inform the employee of this prohibition and requires the employee to acknowledge in writing that the employee was informed. Requires a signed written agreement between the temporary service provider and each employer client. Specifies the content of that written agreement and it instructs DCBS to report certain information to the Department of Revenue and the Employment Department. There's no revenue impact and we're waiting on the fiscal, but the committee could adopt the Dash 3 amendment.
Okay. Are there any questions about the Dash 3 amendments that we talked about? Okay, Representative Thatcher?
Yeah, a couple questions. So currently there are people working for temp agencies, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so when does this language come into effect if they're already hired? It kind of indicates in the amendment that they would have to be signing something after they're hired or upon hire, something to that effect. And so the ones that are already, you know, working for them, do they have to go and come in and sign something? Or and then also I have a question about the pay period. Which pay period prevails? An employer client's pay period might be different than the temp agency's pay period. And I guess those are my two main questions.
Okay. Representative Holvey. Because Representative Holvey has answers, and is Mr. Harvey here from the temp agencies? If you could also answer. Representative Holvey and Mr. Harvey worked on the amendments together, so do you want to go first? Or?
Well, to answer one question, which employer's pay period, I think it's the pay period for whoever the employee is working for, whether they're working for the temp agency or whether they're working for the employer who's paying the check. And what was the first question?
Well, for currently hired temp agency employees.
Well, this bill would...
There's something you're supposed to sign upon hire or receive.
Right, there's an acknowledgement that, the bill would go into effect sometime in the future, and I think that if an employee is currently working, I'll leave that to Mr. Harvey, but I think that this would only happen when they initially go to work. So after this bill gets implemented, but I'll let Mr. Harvey take a stab at that one.
Thank you, Representative Holvey. For the record, Madam Chair, my name is Larry Harvey. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Staffing Association. Specifically, I can give you about 60 seconds of what has created the problem. The problem begins when an employee of a staffing agency, and that staffing agency becomes the employer of record, and the employee is sent out to a site or a location to perform a job on behalf of the client. What we've been seeing a lot of is sometimes the client will ask the employee to only record a certain number of hours back for the staffing agency for payment and then record another set of hours for which that employee is paid under the table. So therefore no tax revenue is being collected. We've had situations where no workers' comp comes into play, and of course if that employee gets hurt, it's always suggested that it was on the other employer's hours, not ours. So the other employer has to cover the workers' comp. The easiest way to eliminate that is, well, not the easiest, the way that we decided to eliminate that at this point is to make a couple of requirements. And one is that to make it, I guess it would be illegal. I want to be careful about using that term and make known that it is not appropriate and not accepted to work for the company, the client company, at the same time that you're on the staffing agency payroll. The pay period that we would be in would be whatever pay period of record is ongoing with the primary employer or the employer of record. Most staffing agencies pay weekly, so that would be come on a Friday or Friday afternoon or Friday morning, whatever they pay. And that's usually the easiest time to take care of that. At some point, all the employees that work for a staffing agency usually get some kind of a booklet or a procedures or here's how we do things here. And they usually get that at the beginning of their employment. Your question, Representative Thatcher, is quite a good question. I'm glad you asked it. Employees could be asked to, if they are already grandfathered in as current employees, they could simply be asked to acknowledge the new procedure for the company on a payday when they're coming in to get their check. The main thing is to make sure that we have workers covered for workers' comp if they happen to be injured on the job. The other aspect, of course, is for the state of Oregon, is that we're actually collecting the taxes that are due. And I'm sure the Department of Revenue will appreciate that. Admittedly, there might be an easier way to solve this, because this seems like it might be a little awkward. I appreciate Representative Holvey being so cooperative with us, and he's been gone out of his way to help us try to get there. If we decide we need to tweak it, we've even agreed that we'll talk about it as the bill goes over to the Senate. So if you'd like to send it over there, we're ready to go over there.
Okay. Are there any questions, Mr. Harvey? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, with this, we only have the amendments. We don't have the fiscal yet, so we have to wait on that, right?
That's correct.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2535.
Here, Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2535. Is there any discussion? Okay, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the Dash 3 amendments are adopted, and we'll carry this over, waiting for a fiscal on this one. Okay, so I close the work session on House Bill 2535. I'm going to open up a work session. We'll go back to the front page of the agenda on House Bill 2702. There are some amendments on this one that came up between Friday and today. So, Jan, would you like to summarize the amendments, and then if somebody would like to come up and speak on them?
Madam Chair and committee members, this is a measure that allows a city to petition the OLCC to adopt a alcohol impact area. The Dash 1 amendment is before you. The committee discussed the Dash 5 the other day, but the Dash 1 is before you, and I will run through it kind of section by section what it does. It does replace the original measure. It allows a city with a population exceeding 300,000 to file this petition with the OLCC, and it specifies what would be contained in the petition. Allows a city to request restriction of an off-premises sales of specific products, and it limits one alcohol impact area per city. Allows OLCC to impose, with specified exceptions, any condition on liquor sales in that alcohol impact area for which the city demonstrated a need or demonstrated a reasonable link to problems in the area. Requires prohibited products to be individually identified, and allows the city to request that OLCC restrict new products that are substantially and materially similar to existing restricted products. Specifies that the OLCC has to send notice to licensed distributors if the alcohol impact area is recognized or if they make a change to the list of restricted products. And it requires the city, after recognizing an alcohol impact area, to study whether the conditions imposed are effective and to submit annual reports to the OLCC. Directs the commission to conduct assessments after 2 years of recognizing that alcohol impact area. And specifies the contents of that assessment, and it specifies conditions under which the commission may or shall withdraw recognition of that alcohol impact area. Allows the city to petition to have the boundaries of the area modified or to repeal a condition on the sales in the alcohol impact area. So we're waiting on a fiscal impact statement, but the committee could adopt the Dash 1 amendment if it chose.
Okay. Thank you. Does anybody like to speak on the Dash 1s? Amendments. So, I guess you're chosen.
I guess so. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Howe, representing the City of Eugene. City of Eugene has been working with the City of Portland on this bill. As you can see by the population threshold, the City of Eugene would not be allowed to have an alcohol impact area under the Dash 1 amendment. However, we think it's a good opportunity to see how it works for the city of Portland and to then come back in the future if it's a successful implementation and see if we can't be included at a later time.
Okay, so with the Dash 1s, it's more or less an experiment for the next 2 years and coming back, giving us a report, how it works, so possibly the other cities that initially wanted to be involved in this can go through and take what the city of Portland did.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Holdy.
Thank you. I'm curious whether this bill would prevent a voluntary impact area as the city of Eugene has had before.
I don't know that I could speak to that. I think that the voluntary area that Eugene had wasn't really implemented by OLCC. I think that the local police just went, pardon me, to the stores and asked if they would take things off their shelves voluntarily. And so I think they have the right to do that if they so choose.
Thanks.
Other questions? Representative Matthews.
Madam Chair, I guess it's odd given my background of law enforcement. Actually, I've been being a non-drinker always for my entire life. I guess it's odd, but I got to say, I take a little exception that we're here now on the Dash 1s and we finally found ground on the Dash 1. These were offered to the proponents when we first entered session and rejected. And then they came back with other efforts that extended beyond the Dash 1. And then they came in with the Dash 5s. And now that it looked as if last Friday we were going to get nothing, that now they're okay with the Dash 1s. This is a lot of time, a lot of expense, a lot of folks working on amendments, and then we end up back to where we started. And it's just not the way that bargaining is done and negotiating should be done. I take exception. If you want to answer to that, that'd be great. But I'm really having a hard time with this particular bill. And it's odd, again, given my background, but the way the strategy has worked on this thing, I honestly don't believe that this wouldn't get to the Senate, seek amendments there, and come back for concurrence. I have a hard time with this.
Representative Kinnamer.
Madam Chair, just a comment. I will not object to the amendments. I think they're an improvement to the bill, but I do not support the bill.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I can appreciate that, you know, bills go back and forth considering a lot of different amendments, you know, but I think the proponents were mainly the City of Eugene and the City of Portland, and I believe the City of Eugene wanted also to be part of this pilot project because they do have an area that, you know, seems to have a lot of inebriated people hanging out a lot of the times, and they did get a voluntary program that seemed to be effective at dispersing the problem, and you know, the long-term impacts of doing that seem to, that they actually recognize a drop in crime. So, you know, I sort of wish that, you know, they would have come up with a City of Portland, City of Eugene allowance for this type of pilot, you know, because you'd have a little bit, you'd have more than one study area, essentially. So, but anyway, I can appreciate things are not negotiated well all the time, but you know, we have a lot of instances of that in this building, I think. Thank you.
Fair point.
Okay. Other comments?
I'll be supporting the amendments to this, but probably will be voting against the bill as well.
Thank you very much for letting us know. Any other questions, comments? Okay. Any other discussion? Thank you, Elizabeth. Anybody else like to speak on this bill?
I haven't moved it yet, correct?
Just the Dash 1, yeah.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2702.
Okay, Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 7202. Is there any other further discussion? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would mirror precisely the comments of Representative Matthews on this.
Okay, thank you. Any other further discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection? Okay, if not, the amendments are adopted. And we're going to carry over 7202 to wait for the fiscal analysis. And I close the work session on House Bill 2702. Thank you. It must be number dyslexic or something.
It's the hour.
Yeah.
Either that or I'm just making up numbers, one of the two. Okay. Let's get one we can do. Drop down to House Bill 3459. This one's actually ready to move. So I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3459.
Madam Chair and committee members, this bill establishes the Office of Small Business Administration within the Office of the Secretary of State for the purpose of facilitating interactions between small businesses and state agencies. It establishes a complaint and investigation procedure, appropriates money to the Office of Secretary of State to fund these functions. There's a proposed Dash 1 amendment before you that prohibits the Office of Small Business Assistance from reviewing and investigating a complaint that is a subject of an agency action that could result in a contested case proceeding under ORS Chapter 183. There is no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal statement issued.
Okay. Representative Borton?
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3459.
Okay. Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3459. Is there any discussion? Okay. Is there any objection? Okay. Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt House Bill 3459 to the floor as amended, with a due pass recommendation, the measure be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Barton moves House Bill 3459 to the floor as amended, with a due pass recommendation, and the measure be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Holden.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Fagan. Aye. Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative
Kenemer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative
Barton. Aye. Chair Representative Doherty. Aye. Okay, the motion passes. And with that, I close the work session on House Bill 3459. And okay, we're going to carry over House Bill 3442. We're still 3342. There's still a question on the fiscal on that one. And I think we're also going to carry over House Bill 3473, unless there have been a slug of amendments put in this bill. This is the Buy America bill, and I know that the parties are still talking, so I think what we'll do is just carry that one over until Wednesday. So we will open a work session on House Bill 2540, and we can adopt an amendment on this. Again, we're waiting on a fiscal.
Madam Chair and committee members, this allows the Construction Contractors Board to revoke, suspend, or refuse to issue a license if the person has engaged in dishonesty by enabling evasion of certain obligations. Adds unpaid wages to the definition of a construction debt. You have the Dash 1 amendment before you that replaces the term court action with the term claim in court of the state and replaces the term proceedings with claims for purposes of perfecting a lien or obtaining judicial administrative remedy.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2540.
Okay, Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2540. Is there any discussion? Okay, see none. Is there any objection? Okay, the Dash 1 amendments are adopted. And this one can't move, right?
Right.
And so we'll carry this one over to Wednesday. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 2540. And open a work session on House Bill 3263. And again, we can adopt the amendments, but waiting for the fiscal. So, Jan, if you could summarize that.
Madam Chair, committee members, the bill requires the state of Oregon to grant paid sick leave to eligible employees who are victims of domestic violence, establishes the annual limit of 160 hours of paid leave for the purpose, requires the state of Oregon to inform certain employees of communications in the workplace related to victimization of an employee, and to inform all employees of availability of leave, declares an emergency. The Dash 2 amendment requires the eligible employee to exhaust all forms of paid leave before using the leave established by these provisions. And it requires the employer to inform the employee annually of provisions of the statute prohibiting the employer conduct as it relates to victims of domestic violence.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3263.
Okay, Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3263. Is there any discussion? Okay, is there any Representative Chenery.
You know, I'm having some difficulties with this bill, but I certainly will not object to the
okay, amendments. Thank you for letting us know. Okay, Representative
Madam Chair, I support the concept of the bill and will be voting for it. I just hope that it does not interfere with any collective bargaining agreements.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other discussion? Is there any other objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted. And again, we'll carry this one over, waiting for a fiscal.
Don't we send it to Ways and Means anyway?
Well, we still have to wait for the fiscal.
We need the fiscal, so
yeah.
We can send it to
you. We need the fiscal.
Some type of paperwork, so
yeah.
We'll
okay.
Get by Wednesday.
Okay. We need paperwork. So I close the work session on House Bill 3263. And open up a work session on House Bill 3342. Jan, if you could summarize for us. Oh, wait.
We're carrying that over.
No, we're still waiting for a fiscal.
Didn't we already carry that over?
We already did.
Yeah, we already carried it over. So I closed the work session on House Bill 3342 because we're going to carry it over, waiting for the fiscal.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Is that 33 or 31?
3342.
Okay.
Carrying over, waiting
Thank
for
you.
A fiscal. I just didn't scratch it off. Well, the rest can be carried over. So we're going to carry over House Bill 3473 and carry over House Bill 2608. And we're going to stand down for about 10 minutes while we wait for Representative Bailey's plane to land. Okay. So.
This plane's late.
I don't know. American planes are never late, so.
Oh, that's the
one. Welcome to the Committee on House, the House Committee on Business and Labor, and I open a work session on House Bill 3436. Jan, could you read the...
Madam Chair, committee members, the bill establishes the Oregon Retirement Savings Investment Board to develop recommendations for establishing the Oregon Secure Retirement Plan to offer retirement investment plans to the private sector employees. Requires the board to report to the legislature by September 2013. I'm going to have to double check that date, and we'll report back to the legislature. I believe it's December 2014. Declares an emergency, and you have before you the Dash 1 amendment, and I believe that's what Representative Bailey will speak to.
Yes. Okay. On the phone we have Representative Jules Bailey. If you could identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning. This is Representative Jules Bailey. I represent House District 42. Thank you for allowing me to testify my time today. I appreciate you taking my testimony. I want to walk briefly through the Dash 1 amendments and take any questions. There are essentially three sections to the Dash 1 amendment. The first section assigns the staffing for the board to legislative administration to ensure that we understand who is going to be staffing the board and how that process works and to try to minimize costs. Two, the second section clarifies the intent of the bill, and it identifies elements and features of the proposed plan to guide the review of federal law and construction of a plan. These are guideposts, they're not prescriptions, and again, the intent of this bill is to create a study that will report back to the legislature for the legislature to decide if and how it wants to act on it, whether adopting the recommendations, rejecting the recommendations, modifying and changing the recommendations, but to at least present some cogent information on what a potential plan might look like to the legislature for 2015. And Section 3 is intended to clarify several aspects of the board in that report in response to comments from the public during the public hearing. In Section 3, B, and C, there is, an important clarification that ERISA is specifically a subject at issue when studying the plan's features. And the bill really makes it crystal clear that that adjustments in the plan can be made by the legislature. Section 3E specifies that the study is to include available plans and to look at existing products and services. Section 3 F and G that includes that the board should also include a discussion of governance and recommendations for plan participants having representation on the board. So these three sections, I think, really get at what is the heart of 3436, which is we're not just creating a bill to study a problem. We have a bill that would study potential solutions to a problem, but not set anything in stone, really just provide good information back to the legislature to make a decision about if, how, or whether the legislature decides to move forward. I want to address one other thing in my initial comments. My understanding is that representatives from the insurance industry have made today bring up issues regarding fiscal analysis. Now, I understand that we're still waiting on the fiscal for the bill. There are some comparisons that have been made by the insurance industry to a study that was done in California. I want to emphasize that the House Bill 3436 is a very different kind of study. It's not the in-depth kind of market analysis, market feasibility study yet. That's putting the cart before the horse. This is a more high-level look at what are the options, what might a plan look like. The House Bill 3436 also indicates very clearly in the language that the recommendations back can carry no liability for the state. So we're not putting state dollars at risk here. This bill probably will have a fiscal cost, which is why its next stop is Ways and Means, and that fiscal issue can be addressed in Ways and Means. We hope they'll send it on down there. But I think the policy issues here are pretty cut and dry, and it's my hope that the committee will act to give the legislature the information it needs to make some informed decisions in 2015. be happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of Representative Bailey? Representative Kinnamer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a correction. I believe, Jules, that you referred to Section 3. I think in the amendments it's Section 2. And that's, is in my...
Sorry, I think I was speaking to the third section that I was referencing. I apologize for the miscommunication.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to be sure about that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, any other questions of Representative Bailey? Okay, seeing none, would you like to stay on the line for the rest of the hearing?
I would love to, but unfortunately I cannot.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. Have a good day. We'll see you when you get back.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, is there anyone else to speak on House Bill 3436? Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. My name is Tom Simpson. I'm with Standard Insurance. The only change here, or the only clarification I'd like to make, is I disagree with Representative Bailey on the clear-cut policy choice. This bill, with this amendment, makes the choice. It assumes a solution to a problem. We're in agreement that there is a problem with Oregonians saving for the retirement. No question. Mm-hmm. That's why we're in the business we're in. This bill assumes the policy this bill puts in place is that the state of Oregon needs to get into the retirement plan's business so that it can solve that problem. We disagree with that. We believe that there needs to be more study about why Oregonians aren't saving for retirement, and that there is room for a partnership between the state of Oregon and the industry to try to solve that problem. That's a clarification I'd like to make.
Thank you very much. And I'm hoping that with the study committee, that's something that will be looked at very, very carefully and very closely.
Thank you.
Because you guys are the experts.
If I may.
Questions?
The representative talked about that he specifically itemizes ERISA and cost to the state. Mm-hmm. Would you concur that the amendments at least frame that correctly?
I'm not, Chair Doherty, member of the committee, I'm not sure that I can assume that there is going to, that's, by putting it in that way, that it waves ERISA away. Oh. It's too complicated. I mean, ERISA and any DOL opinions are very, very complicated, and it would be very difficult for the state of Oregon to be in a place of managing a plan without assuming some risk.
Okay. And another question, if I
Please.
May. Thank you. The other question is, do the amendments get rid of the employer mandate?
Employer
was
mandate.
In the previous bill.
I am unclear about that.
Okay, fine. Thank you, Representative Barton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for coming in, Mr. Simpson. I want to. I respect your position and your client's position. I gather you're opposed to this. I want to clarify the nature of the opposition. Is it with the bill per se or technical, or is there something we could do to amend it to get you on board? Or is it what I think you're saying, is it essentially the objection is more fundamental? It's perhaps a slippery slope type objection towards government entering into a sector. Is that such that there's nothing we could do through the amendment process to resolve these concerns?
Members of the committee, I appreciate the question. I think I would answer it two ways. One is, yes, there's a fundamental problem we have because this puts the state of Oregon in direct competition to us,
right.
Potentially.
Mm-hmm.
I realize there's a study potentially there. But I also, after the last hearing, public hearing, we sat down and put together a possible set of amendments that have not been drafted, but they were submitted of an amendment we could live with. It's not under consideration today.
Other questions?
I suppose a comment, and I like this bill.
Yeah.
I like the idea of this bill. I co-sponsored it, etc. And I would love to find a way to get the standards expertise, at least at the table, mm-hmm. in this work group. I think the work group approach is infinitely better than Barton, Beyer, and Bailey getting together and doing our own bill. And as you can tell, Bailey's clearly the intellectual force behind that. In which case, because, I mean, we're no experts on this, it'd probably end up looking a lot like the California approach. Not because that's necessarily the best thing for Oregon, but because we don't know what else to do. I would love to get, this is my vision anyway, you guys on board, not unlike the 529 plan. It's not really a public option so administered by Oregon so much. The state of Oregon just has a portal that then is contracted out to a company. In this case, I think the standard, I like to think this might create opportunities for the standard, but that's just my vision for it. But I get that it would make someone in your shoes very nervous. I respect that, and I'd love to, again, get you on board in some way in the work group, even if you can't support the bill, such that you can help make this better.
Well, I appreciate the fact that I'm a third-generation Oregonian. I'd love to show California how to do this right.
Yes, I think we should.
If there's a room to move, I would love to find it, too.
Well, I'd love that.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Widener?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, would be good. Did you get amendments drafted that just aren't under consideration, or are they just LC never spit anything out?
We never got anything back from LC.
Okay. Because I actually kind of like the concept as well, but it's how do you tie private industry mm-hmm. with this? And I'm trying to figure out how it would work at the state, because I was actually supportive when Bush was wanting to privatize part of Social Security. So actually, when I'm putting money in, some of it went to me rather than going out to everyone else. But I don't think this, what we're doing here, I think it's the wrong direction to head with this. That's why I'd be kind of curious to get your input, see what your ideas were that you guys put in for amendments. So if there's any way you could get that to me, I would mm-hmm. greatly appreciate it.
I'd be glad to.
Because okay. I think just on a comment, just, I mean, the New York Times has had a large article, and there's been a lot of, I think there's something in Oregonian the other day about how the younger generation is not saving for retirement, mm-hmm. and it's a generation that will not stay in a job for 20 or 30 years to qualify for a retirement program, and whether it's not the opportunities or, you know, we're no longer teaching financial, I mean, I know it's kind of a scary thought, but I used to teach personal finance to sophomores and seniors when I taught. And we went over all of these things mm-hmm. and we talked about that, and that sort of component is no longer there. But the reason I'm supporting this bill, and I think it's a good idea, is that we need to work in partnership with private sector insurance companies, retirement companies, that kind of thing. But it's one of these things. I doubt that I could go to the Standard or Fidelity or any of these and say, I have no money, but I want to give you $50 a month, and please don't charge me any fees. Now, if I was a shareholder, I would not like that for the company to do that. But when I come to you and I have $30,000 that I have saved, and now I want you to invest, that's how I kind of foresee what this program is, or $20,000 or $10,000, something that makes it a little more palatable for private sector to deal with and to be able to invest and turn that $10,000 into $30,000. So that's, I think, where the expertise is really needed. Is really needed in this process.
Let me be clear. We understand the problem clearly. I mean, it is a serious problem. I mean, I've got two sons. They're both graduated. One's about ready to graduate from college. The other one's already out. I'm pounding on the table to tell them to retire. I mean, get their retirement plan set up and to be saving for that. I totally get that. So again, we're not obviously not opposed to having this. We're opposed about the perceived role of the state of Oregon in this, and it sounds and it kind of smells like the state wants to go into competition with us. So that's a real concern for us and our peers.
Right. So and that's why we want you at the table. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you so much for coming out.
Jan Meekums is hoping to speak.
Pardon?
Jan Meekums.
She's raising her hand.
Oh yes, Jan, come on out.
Chair Daugherty and members of the committee, thank you for entertaining me this morning. And I don't mean that in a funny way, having me speak. For the record, my name is Jan Meekums. I'm the state director for NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business. With 7,500 Main Street small business owner in this state, we truly are the voice of small business in this building. There isn't another small business organization representing small business that has more members. We also have 350,000 members nationwide that we survey and appeal to on a monthly basis. So this is truly a small business bill because large businesses have retirement plans. It is the small businesses that do not. And we recognize this problem. It's not only a problem for the employees, it's a problem for the employer because often the small business employer that doesn't have a retirement fund is because they can't even afford them one for themselves. And so we recognize the problem. We would like to be at the table to come up with a solution, how this problem can be addressed. But we do have the same concerns that were represented earlier. One is the state going into competition with our private sector members that are in the insurance business, that are in the financial planning business. And the most egregious thing for us is the fact that this is a small business issue. There is a mandate in this bill that will put a burden upon small businesses. And they don't have HRs, so it's something that they would have to add staff in order to manage it. What kind of liabilities are on the part of the small business in the management of this? I just think there, and I know a study is being done, but I don't know where the Dash 1 amendment came from. It certainly did not come from the business community, and yet this is a business bill, and it's a small business bill. So I think that we definitely should be at the table so we can have input, and we also can have understanding of what the intent is and exactly how that would be arrived at. And as was brought up, Representative Doherty, I have, you know, someone that has $50 a month to put aside, but you know, they have to pay fees. Well, if through this system someone has $50 a month to put aside, somebody's got to administer it at the state level. Mm-hmm. That's going to cost the taxpayers. That's going to cost small businesses. I mean, there are many things to work out, and we're very troubled by this bill. And we're not by the intent. We are very supportive of the intent, but we're very troubled in the way it is evolving. So I just wanted to make that statement.
Because I do understand the mandate, the employer mandate has been taken out of this bill. So.
I have not seen that. When I read the Dash 1, I did not see where it was removed.
So.
I know the employer, there's not an employee mandate, that it's the employee's option to participate, but it was my understanding on the original bill, and when I reviewed the Dash 1, I didn't see where the mandate for the employer had been removed.
Okay, and we'll make sure we get that
okay.
to you.
Thank you very
much. Thank
you
very much. Any questions of Ms. Meekum while she's up here? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, anyone else want to speak on this bill? Okay, seeing none.
We'll move the Dash 1.
We'll move the Dash 1s.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3436.
Okay, Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3436. Is there any discussion? Representative Kennemer?
Madam Chair, I think Dash 1s are an improvement, but I kind of agree with my co-vice chair that they could probably use some further improvement.
Okay.
It's a great idea. I have a retired sister who's essentially destitute, and I've seen how not learning to save and prepare for your future works up front and very personal.
Okay, so maybe.
But I just think we need to be careful about, you know, Mr. Simpson talked about the bias. I think we need to be looking for the best solution rather than a solution, and I think that's still missing in the Dash 1s.
Mm-hmm.
And just a real concern, a great cause, and I agree, your point is incredible. The information about the failure of Americans to save, younger Americans, is frightening.
Mm-hmm. It is. And thank you. Maybe on the other side we can deal with some of those issues.
Okay. I hope so.
Other
thank you.
Comments, questions? Okay, are there any objections? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Okay, with that, I close the, and we'll, this will be carried over. We're still waiting for a fiscal on it, so we'll close the work session on House Bill 3436. Okay, so I think we've cut them all. In summary, I want to go through and talk and again review which bills will be carried over, which have passed, and which are not moving. So if you want to go check with me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, House Bill 2669, interns, is carried over. House Bill 2672, carried over. House Bill 2702, carried over. 2977, carried over. 3076, carried over. 3142, carried over. 3307 has a do pass recommendation. 3342, carry over.
3436 carryover, 3473 carryover, 2535 carryover, 2540 carryover, 3263 carryover, 3459 is a due pass as amended, 2608 carryover, and 3487 goes with a due pass, and we are not moving House Bill 3470. Okay. Are there any questions? If not, be right on time on Wednesday. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, come see me. So I adjourn the meeting of the House Committee on Business and Labor. Thank you.
Here's Taps.